WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
For decades, John Leonard, one of our founding critics here at Fresh Air, reviewed books, TV, and popular culture. For us, for CBS Sunday Morning, for the New York Times, and for New York Magazine. He died Wednesday of complications from lung cancer at age 69. In 1997, after being hospitalized for alcoholism and releasing a book called Smoke and Mirrors, Violence, Television, and Other American Cultures, John Leonard told Terry that TV in particular was a surprising part of his recovery.
I started watching late at night, anything that was on, because you can only read so many books and so many magazines, and you can only do so much writing, and there are these hours still stretch out before you. So I started watching this stuff, and I started watching it, I thought, as an archaeologist. Well, this was before Nick at Night. And at 3:30 in the morning, you got back-to-back reruns of Mary Tyler Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, in that stage, and I suddenly found myself both a civilian and somebody who was quite needy. At that stage, with what I needed and what I was getting, when she threw her hat in the air, I was thrilled, and I felt younger, and I felt better about myself, and I felt better about her. And I got a satisfaction that I hadn't expected, and I had to remind myself that these satisfactions, as well as some alarms, are available to everybody depending on the appetite we bring. I brought that at 3:00 in the morning because I couldn't sleep, and I got back something like a gift of grace.
John Leonard, speaking to Terry Gross in 1997. John Leonard was a terrific critic whose enthusiasm for good writers and for good writing was evident. In the 1970s, he was the editor of the New York Times Book Review. And when Fresh Air launched its National Daily Show in 1987, John was on board as our first book critic. He was with us for 6 years. More recently, John Leonard was a cultural critic on CBS Sunday Morning and, until his death, TV critic for New York Magazine, where he displayed more knowledge, flair, and enthusiasm than almost anyone on the beat. Especially knowledge, where every review was loaded with dizzyingly diverse lists of references and comparisons from literature, film, TV, and life itself. His old employer, the New York Times, got it exactly right in today's obituary when it said, quote, "the comma seemed to be invented expressly for him," unquote. Our current book critic, Maureen Corrigan, wanted to say something about what he meant to her. She says, quote, "There's a word I associate with John Leonard. I heard him once use it about a piece of writing he liked, acrobatic. It's such a perfect word to describe flexible language that tumble-salts across boundaries. And, of course, it's the perfect word to apply to Leonard's own writing and, indeed, his own agile and erudite mind," unquote. In 1988, the year after Fresh Air premiered nationally, we featured interviews with all the critics on staff at the time. Here's some of Terry's conversation with John Leonard when he was reviewing books for us and television for New York Magazine.
You write TV criticism for New York Magazine. Mm. Now, I once had a listener say to me, someone who didn't know of your other work and who didn't know of your former affiliation with the Times and all the places you reviewed books, someone said to me, "You let a TV critic review books on your show?" And I thought that was really funny because in this person's mind, television and books were so totally incompatible. And someone who had something to say about television couldn't possibly have any interest or anything to say about books.
Well, I don't understand it. Television, for me, is a central fact of the American cultural environment. It's unavoidable. Not to think about it seems to me to be irresponsible intellectually. Now, to write about it, I'm not quite that heavy-handed because I watch television at least half the time for the same reason as other people do. You know, I want something that isn't going to demand an enormous amount out of me, and I don't want to leave the house. But because I am that much of a perfectly standard, average, conventional American in my approach to the talking furniture, it also helps me to pick and choose among new programs and say, if you like this kind of thing, you'll like that kind of thing.
For any of our listeners who think that Fresh Air was the first time you were on radio, I will point out that back in 1961 to 63, you were the program director of KPFA, Pacifica Radio, in California. And that Pacifica is a small network of public radio stations that precedes National Public Radio. 2 years isn't that long of a time. What got you out of radio?
Well, it's more of a question of what gets you into it. I was out at Berkeley and Pacifica Radio, which was founded by conscientious objectors after World War II, was there. It was a kind of crash pad for bright middle-class dropouts. And it was wonderful because you were allowed to play. You were playing with the airwaves, you were playing with ideas. I got a chance to learn all this machinery and to mix sounds and to have a lot of fun. But it was still that. It was a vacation from whatever the reality would be. And then I sold my first novel, and I thought, that's reality. Now, that's what I am. I was mistaken. But I took that money, I quit my job, and I went off to the woods in New Hampshire to behave as a novelist is traditionally supposed to behave, starve.
How long did that last?
About 6 months.
And
I ran out of the money.
I
had a year-old kid. You can't live in the woods in New Hampshire on advances on first novels for very long.
I just want to ask you briefly how you got from writing novels to criticism.
Well, the American public proved to be quite hard to please so far as my novels were concerned. I published a couple in the 60s, I guess three, the last one in the 1969, another in 1973. And the New York Times came along and offered me a job at the Times Book Review, which seemed pretty close, or as close as I was likely to get to a writer's life. And that proved to be something that I could feed the kids on, and not something I at all regret. I'm working on another novel, but it will not stun the world either. It's something that I do because I like that kind of writing, and something I know I cannot do as well as the writers that I recommend over the air and Fresh Air.
In a recent review that you did for Fresh Air, you were reviewing a book on the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, mm-hmm. and you revealed more or less in that review that you were a recovering alcoholic yourself.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you got into the kind of problem that I know a lot of writers get into in the solitary life of writing and the difficulty of, facing the blank page mm-hmm. every day, if that had been a serious problem.
All alcoholics rationalize their reasons for drinking or having gotten to wherever it was that we got. And writers are better at rationalizing than most other people because they use the language so that we have embroidered a myth, but basically you're just a drunk like everybody else. And after a certain point, you've poisoned yourself, and it doesn't matter why you are drinking or where you find the time or where you find the money. Then, if you are fortunate enough to sober up, you discover your writing doesn't get better. It certainly doesn't get worse. It just gets a little quicker. But then the rest of your life tends to become more interesting. So that your writing then ceases to be just words and reflects something of a texture of a life that you've reclaimed.
When you were coming back to work again after mm-hmm. being ill for a while, mm-hmm. was everybody ready to receive you? Was there an understanding that you were?
Well, one of the signs of alcoholic behavior is I worked right through this.
I
right through it until I was hospitalized because I could no longer walk. So a whole lot of people didn't know about it. Now I didn't work as much as I work now, but I was meeting two weekly deadlines
right.
at a magazine and a newspaper. But you have to think how sick this is. My wife had left me. My telephone had been cut off. I couldn't put the checks that they were mailing me into the bank because I never left the house. But one thing I did was get my copy in on time. I've talked to a number of alcoholics who, the one thing they managed to do in the last stages of their, of what they call their bottoming out, what we call our bottoming out, is they were getting straight A's at graduate school, or they were doing something. You hold on to one thing, which may be the last shred of pride you have, and say, at least I'm doing that. Therefore, I'm not really as sick as they say I am. Look, I'm getting my copy in on time. It's insane. But yeah, alas, for the given the nature of our society, there are very few newspapers and magazines, very few businesses, period, who haven't had a lot of experience with some form of chemical dependency or another. and people are getting a lot more understanding about it. I was quite eagerly and affectionately helped by people with whom I had professional relations. They were very good.
Another book question for you. Yeah. Have you always been the kind of person who took a book with you when you left the house, no matter
yeah.
where you were going?
Yeah.
When you were young, you did that?
Oh, always. Always. It was embarrassing when I was a kid first starting that kind of maniacal reading. I could only afford paperback books.
They fit in pockets better.
They fit in pockets better, but they had such lurid covers.
Right,
and I was such
right.
a serious little man, right, that I didn't want anybody thinking that I was reading something that was lurid. I mean, did you see, remember the paperback copy of James Joyce's Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man? You know, it's the half-naked woman on the cover walking in the waves. Now, I knew that wasn't what the book was about. So I would rip off the covers of the paperback books, but then they'd fall apart in my pockets. Oh, no, it's panic. It's awful. You have to have a book wherever you go, not just because you want to read all the time, but because this is a world in which this is a world of lines. This is a world of traffic jams.
That's
this
right.
This is a world of everybody else missing their appointment. And you're being stuck, and I won't go anywhere without a book.
Okay. I thank you very much for talking about this.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
John Leonard, speaking with Terry Gross in 1988. He died this week at age 69.